Hey everybody, it's Terry with Marketing Mambo. As the mom of a high school senior, I've had a front row seat to all of the emails and direct mail and calls that are being done to high school students to attract them to the next stage in their education. But to tell you the truth, prior to this time, I never really thought too much about marketing for higher education. But my guest today, Jessica Sacheret, is an expert in this area. Prior to joining MediaCross, which is an agency that specializes in marketing for higher ed, she was a longtime admissions counselor with the university. So she is a true expert from both sides of the table. And I think that you're going to really enjoy hearing more about this interesting area of marketing. Now, it is September, and it's a very fitting time for us to be talking about back to school. And speaking of hitting the books, I want to take a moment to talk about my book, Winning the Game of Work, Career Happiness and Success on Your Own Terms. If you're not currently satisfied in your career, it could be because you're not playing by the right rules. In this book, I share the unwritten rules that I learned from wise mentors and coaches, as well as a lot of lessons I learned the hard way. You can work hard, you can be smart, you can have great experience, but sometimes you're not going to get the rewards and recognition you actually deserve if you don't know exactly how to play the game of work. So if you're finding yourself not quite getting the return on the investment that you'd like to in terms of reward and recognition and career happiness, and then I'd suggest taking a look at the book. It is available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. So without further ado, let the mambo begin. Welcome to Marketing Mambo with your host, Terry McDougall. It's the fun and fast podcast where we cha-cha chat with marketing movers and shakers from around the globe. Hey, everybody. I am so pleased today to bring our special guest, Jessica Sacheret. Jessica, welcome to Marketing Mambo.
Thank you so much, Terry.
So, Jessica, could you take a couple minutes and introduce yourself and the company that you work for?
Absolutely. So I am the Vice President of Higher Education Marketing for MediaCross. We are a full-service marketing agency located in St. Louis, Missouri. And we really have a niche in recruitment marketing in general, but I lead the division that works specifically with colleges and universities on their recruitment initiatives.
Oh, wow. What kind of schools do you work for?
Yeah, primarily we work with not-for-profit institutions, but all different types. So community colleges, technical colleges, private four-years, public institutions, the whole gamut. And the services that we provide also being full service, go from market research to brand development, digital marketing, all of the different tools you might need to recruit a new student.
Yeah, that's so cool. I've got one son who's out of college, one who's in college, and a daughter who's 17. So we're getting ready to start on that journey with her. And I can remember as a high school senior back in the 80s, getting lots of direct mail. So it's kind of funny because even though I'm a marketer, I guess I really never thought about marketing for colleges and universities and technical schools. So how is that different than marketing for other types of businesses?
Well, you're right that the marketing for colleges and universities, especially in the not-for-profit sector, definitely is kind of traditionally seen as maybe being about at least 5, maybe 10 years behind consumer marketing trends. Digital marketing is fairly new to most colleges and universities in terms of using that as a method to recruit new students. So it's not necessarily all that different if they're doing it right. There's definitely pages to take from consumer marketing. And I would also equate the for-profit method of operation in terms of recruitment is much more aligned with your more modern marketing tactics. And they've certainly invested more in marketing than your typical traditional not-for-profit university. So, and that's what's made them become so much more competitive in a lot of ways, and had where other types of colleges and universities suffered a bit with the pandemic and saw enrollment decline. In 2020, for-profit colleges saw a boost. So those primarily online for-profit colleges were able to grow their enrollment where others were not.
Wow, that's so interesting. And, you know, I know that a lot of for-profit colleges in some ways have been sort of on the forefront of virtual learning for a while. And there are some standouts like Arizona State that has had a pretty robust online program. But for a lot of universities, this is probably pretty new for them to have it to have to pivot so quickly. So that became a competitive advantage for those for-profit universities. Why pay the premium for a not-for-profit if you're basically getting the same offering?
Sure. And also because a lot of the for-profit institutions already had a very robust online virtual classroom solution, the transition that some of more traditional colleges and universities that maybe had a few classes online or maybe none at all had to really make some decisions quickly to retain the students that they had when things shut down and to continue to recruit without with all of the uncertainty of when are things going to open back up.
Yeah. So tell me, what does the typical process look like when you start working with a new school? I'm a marketer. I worked in financial services, and I'm just wondering what some of the parallels are or maybe where things might diverge from what marketers in other areas of corporate might experience.
Yeah, you bet. So we certainly start with more of a discovery in our kickoff process. And the range of services that we might provide to a particular college can be different for each one. We might do kind of the whole kit and caboodle for one university and another one, we're just kind of focusing on digital marketing. But either way, we want to really understand the institution and their unique selling proposition, which is a pretty general marketing term. I think that one of the things that happens in traditional not-for-profit colleges and universities is that they haven't necessarily dug into what does truly make them unique. You'll often hear small private liberal arts colleges say the same thing. They might all say, well, we have small class sizes, our faculty pay attention to you. And those are all wonderful things and they're true. But when an objective outside agency like MediaCross can come in and ask questions and hear the stories from both current students and faculty and staff, we can really help to tease out the truly differentiating pieces that makes a college or university authentic and use that throughout our marketing campaigns to attract new students. So the discovery process is pretty important so that we can understand those pieces. And then we're going to also understand the audiences, right? I mean, a community college's audiences are very different than a large private university, right? We have to make sure that our audiences are well understood and that we craft marketing solutions that are segmented and personalized. And that's a piece too that for-profit, the consumer marketing, like we are all, whether we're 17 or 35 and looking to go back to school, we live in a world where personalized and curated content is in front of us all the time. Like we expect that level of personalization from any brand. And so bringing colleges and universities up to speed with how we can highly segment their audiences, serve content to these prospective students that is going to bring them into the funnel and take them through the funnel in terms of inquiring all the way through enrollment.
Yeah, when you were talking about the small class sizes, and certainly you see that with so many schools, we used to call that table stakes, right? You have to have that in order to even be considered. And I love what you're saying also about really considering the audience, because obviously aspects of a college that are going to be appealing to a 17-year-old might be very different from a working mom who wants to go back and complete her degree or somebody who wants to get a certificate that a college or technical school might offer. So very interesting. And who do you typically work with at the universities or colleges? Do they have our classic marketing departments, or are you working with the head of admissions, or does it really depend?
It does kind of depend. I would say the two most common would be the admissions office, and that's my background and a few of my colleagues' background. We worked in the office of admissions for many years and understand the cycle and speak that language. Mm-hmm. So we do often work with admissions offices because they sometimes do have their own marketing budgets that are specifically earmarked for recruitment, which is our specific wheelhouse. But But we also have clients that are in the marketing office. Many colleges and universities have a separate marketing office. Sometimes they're combined with admissions. The structure sort of varies. But the marketing office for a university is also serving the entire university. So they might be working with us to, again, do recruitment, but we also can help develop like university level marketing and branding and that kind of thing too. So, but there's also in a more decentralized university where each department or college has their own marketing arm. That's also a part of our clients too. So like schools of music and theater schools and things like that, their marketing might span from college recruitment, but also the performances that they host on campus, and they need to inform the community about those things. So there's a lot of marketing happening in colleges and universities. It's pretty niche.
Yeah, that's so cool. And as you're talking about it, I'm certainly seeing a lot of parallels. I worked for big banks, and there was the branding at the top of the house, but then there were many businesses under the umbrella, and each of those businesses had their own marketing teams, but it had to ladder up to whatever the overall brand was. And there's a lot of interesting interplay there. One of the other things that you were talking about there, for example, the music schools and promoting and letting the community know about performances. Well, I'm sure that that feeds into recruitment as well. Mm-hmm. When you're going back to say, like, what does this brand stand for? Well, if people have come and experienced the performances, and then they're going to know the quality of the students and what the school's all about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, any of those activities are kind of awareness activities. So how much, depending on how we are positioning the university, from whether we're talking directly to students in a one-to-one type of communication channel or speaking broadly to the community, it's all part, we're all recruiting all the time, basically at a college or university.
How have you seen marketing for colleges evolve over the years? Because just as an outside observer, to me, it seems like I've seen just in the last few years, even like a lot more outreach from the Alumni Association. I went to an undergrad and graduate school. And as a marketer, I'm looking at that and saying, oh, well, that just makes sense, right? That makes sense on so many fronts for the health of the university. What are some of the things that you've seen, Jessica?
Sure. So when I think back to when I first started in an admissions office, it was in terms of the admissions office and the marketing that was happening, it wasn't nearly as savvy or modern as it is today, obviously. It was a lot of one-to-one types of communication from the admissions counselor to the students that they might be working with, and was reliant on one-to-one email communication and just a lot of that outreach, lots of boots on the ground types of stuff, right? There wasn't a lot of marketing happening to support those conversations. And I think that's where the colleges and universities got hip, that we need to not only do that one-to-one boots on the ground types of recruitment, but we need to raise the level of awareness of our college or university. One of the biggest changes in the last maybe 10 to 15 years is the introduction of a customer relationship management system. So a CRM. I remember when we got our first CRM at the university I worked at years ago, and that really changed the game. Suddenly we were able to email prospective students on a mass scale for not that much money. So much, like you said before, like so much of the recruitment pieces relied on direct mail and print. And now we had this way to get in front of students on a larger scale and brand those communications, not just be a plain text email. Then lots of the marketing went into the email bucket, right? Like we kind of took stuff out of the print flow and relied super heavily on communicating with students by email. Well, now, 10 years later, it's almost like what is old is new again, because email communication to Generation Z is not as effective as it was to maybe millennial generation, et cetera. Emails are just, they get a ton of them, they immediately delete them, or they don't really read them. It's just not as effective. So there's now a kind of a revival of print and direct mail and really nice pieces in terms of quality and sending premium items and that kind of stuff. Getting stuff in the mail is more fun than the emails now. And of course, there's digital and social marketing that came into play. Like I said, it's kind of a late adopter to digital marketing when you compare to big consumer brands, but it's definitely, at least for the clients that we work with, has been a huge game changer in terms of being able to track the advertising that they're doing back to enrollment data, because more traditional methods of advertising, when you're talking about not just recruitment, but using billboards or television commercials and that kind of thing, was a little bit harder to really tie a one-to-one relationship to enrolling students, where digital marketing, we can do a little bit more of that.
You've touched on two things that have come up a few times in earlier episodes of Marketing Mambo. And one is the resurgence of direct mail. I started my career as a marketer in direct mail in the 80s because there was no internet, right? If direct response was mail. And people used to complain a lot because there would be a lot of junk mail and there wasn't a lot of recycling back then either. And I think a lot of us felt guilty about just throwing a lot of paper away. I agree with you that sometimes that can really cut through the fray much more than email. With my kids, ages 17 to 23, if I get an email and I forward it to them or something like that, or as the parent, I get something that alerts me that they got something from a school or whatever, and I'll ask them, did you get this? Oh, I don't know. They just don't check their email at all, right? They're corresponding with their friends on Instagram and stuff like that. And the other thing is the whole idea of attribution, that it can be very difficult for things like I was mentioning to you before we hit record that you're in St. Louis and my oldest son went to University of Missouri and driving on the highway to Columbia, there's a lot of billboards along the way, which is cool. I was always excited, like, oh, we're getting into tiger country. But you know that that has an impact, but how much? Right? And how do you measure that as part of the entire integrated campaign? So one of the questions that I have about the direct mail is how much are you integrating that with other tactics like social media or other things that you're doing?
Hopefully as much as possible. So when we run campaigns for colleges and universities, we want them to be multi-channel. So we might combine more sophisticated marketing tactics like IP targeting to prime the pump, as it were, like to serve digital ads to a household before we send a mailer so that hopefully they have seen the brand somewhere. And so when they get the piece of mail, there's a connection there. And then we might follow up with a heavier like social media presence or targeted social media campaign to that same list of students so that there is that holistic, different ways to tell the story, because we would use different types of visuals in a digital display ad than we would in social media. We can use video and things like that. So whenever we can tie direct mail to also, whether that's email or other digital types of communication, we get better results.
Yeah. Earlier, when you were talking about the for-profit universities versus the not-for-profit universities, I've worked with a lot of nonprofits over my career because in corporate, a lot of times we're doing sponsorships and just kind of looking over the fence, if you will, at nonprofit. One of the things that I think can be difficult is that there's not necessarily the same measurement criteria. When we're working in a for-profit business, we're trying to make a profit, you know, and you're measuring things by how much money did we make? Were we profitable? And with a not-for-profit, they've got to be thoughtful. And I think that you talked about this, the admissions data, the enrollment data. But is that one of the challenges or maybe one of the hurdles that not-for-profit universities have had to get over in terms of getting up to speed with marketing, that we really need to measure this and maybe measure it throughout the funnel, not just did we get the class that we want? What are some of the criteria that universities and colleges and technical schools are using to determine success?
Absolutely. So the attribution models, when we discuss like what key performance indicators a particular campaign might need to show in order to prove the return on investment, they might differ from project to project. But I think that as budgets shrink, which is kind of what happens, especially when you have a downturn type of year, your budget gets tighter, you have to do more with less, it's much more important that to our clients that we can prove the return on the investment in whatever the project is. With our standard type of campaign for a traditional student, we are looking at the enrollment drivers. So the activities that a student takes in an average college search process, they are going to inquire, ask for more information. They are going to hopefully visit campus in some capacity. They're going to apply. They're going to then, if they get admitted, pay their deposit. So we're looking at those steps and making sure that all of our communications are, you know, there's different methods at each point in the funnel to move them, but it's those conversions that we are paying attention to, reporting on, making sure that we are reaching those benchmarks and goals that we set at the beginning of a project that helps them turn around and say, oh, okay, so in order to get these 300 students to walk on campus in the fall, we need this many applications, this many visits, this many, mm-hmm. you know, so we kind of back it up. So that's a pretty typical conversation that we have with a client at the outset.
Thank you for clarifying that. And what I'm curious about is, are you coming across some new clients where they don't have that infrastructure or thought process in place? And if so, what does the process look like to get them to think through all of that?
I think that the most common scenario where we might be helping a client establish those KPIs are when colleges and universities launch new types of programs. And that's really a fun area that we get into. So your typical undergraduate admissions office probably has a historical funnel data out several mm-hmm. years out. So that makes it a little easier. But when we are crafting a campaign, like for instance, just in December, we launched a brand new online Doctor of Nursing Practice program for a university in Virginia. And we can go off of market trends analysis type stuff and see like what the potential audience looks like and what competitors are doing in the marketplace. And they typically have a number in their minds in terms of enrollees as far as what they need to enroll in this new class or new program to validate that it is a viable program for the university. So yeah, so that's when we get a little bit more into trying to establish those KPIs. But there's also in a first year, it's almost a little bit of a test year. Yeah. You do have to make some assumptions and you have to see how it works. And one of the things that we make sure that we are always doing is staying flexible with the strategies that we provide clients. We're going to watch it. If it's not working, we're going to change it. We have to stay kind of nimble like that, or if we set it and forget it, we're probably not going to meet the goal.
Well, that's the beauty of working with experts like you guys, because you've got a lot of data points from other clients and so forth that you can probably look at and extrapolate if you're working with a school on, oh, you want to launch this new program. Okay, well, this is the data that we have. These are the trends that we see from research that we've done in the marketplace. So I think that we might have touched on this a little bit at the beginning of the conversation, but what are the big things that you've seen this year with COVID? What are some of the big hurdles? Are a lot of colleges running into, you know, students wanting to take a gap year, so there are less applicants? What are you seeing?
Sure. I mean, it's actually pretty impressive what colleges and universities were able to do amidst the pandemic when things shut down, and both from serving their current students to continuing to recruit students. Typically, we say in the business that change at a university is like turning around a cruise ship. Like, it doesn't happen overnight. You got to keep that wheel yeah. turning for a while. And they did pivot so quickly and so effectively across the board. Because typically, like in March, last March, when things shut down, typically that is such an important time for what we call yield, which is making sure that all of the students that were admitted, or as many as possible, actually commit and walk on campus, right? So that's like mm-hmm. the final countdown.
Yeah.
If you will. And that's leading up to May 1st, which is the national decision date, which is what all enrollment managers are keeping their eye on. And so it took away the opportunity for like admitted student days and all of these times, these opportunities to really show a student that they belong at a particular college or university. Mm-hmm. So offering the virtual events and still keeping students connected to a college or university through, I've seen podcasts and other live events that still gave a student the opportunity to really get to know like what the students are like there, or even though they might not be on campus in the fall and might be attending virtually. So they pivoted really quickly. I think that we're still going to continue to see effects of 2020, even for fall 2021, through the application phase is typically in the fall, like where seniors are applying. And there was a sharp decline across the industry in terms of how many applications colleges and universities were getting, because really, at the end of the day, it's the guidance counselor or the career and college counselor in a high school that's following up with those students and saying, hey, you need to finish your application. Like, they didn't have that push, that person watching the deadline for them. And there's a big delay, really, in high school seniors kind of acting right now. So it's almost like the funnel got pushed a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you. And thankfully, I don't have a senior. My daughter's a junior, though, and there are less seats rates for SATs and ACTs. There's a lot of ripple effects of what's going on that's going to impact. And not that this is your area of expertise, but more and more of the universities are going to test optional, right?
Yes.
For ACTs and SATs, which is really interesting. And I'm wondering what you think some of the lasting impacts will be of the changes that colleges and universities have had to make during this time. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, and Terry, you're absolutely right. And in terms of the test optional change, many colleges and universities took that step in 2020 because ACT and SAT test dates, they got canceled. And there were many students that were left without an opportunity to even take the test. So I think it will be a discussion at many colleges and universities whether or not to keep that in place and continue to be test optional, even once ACT and SAT test dates resume to their normal kind of capacities. I think that the college entrance exam will be an optional thing, that maybe you qualify for scholarships through that, but it's not necessarily required for admission to many universities. I think that another thing that will stick around is virtual events made it possible for a student from California to visit a school in Missouri without paying for flight and hotel and all of that kind of stuff. So I think mm-hmm. that there will be either virtual options for many events that are kind of the bigger flagship events for an admission cycle. And I think that's going to be a component of recruitment for years.
Yeah. You know, I think that there's so many cool things that are going on virtually now with virtual conferences or expos. And I've been to some events where a virtual networking event where you can walk virtually between rooms, right? And I mm-hmm. think about when my oldest son was looking at colleges and they had the regional college nights. For example, University of Kansas came to the Chicagoland area, but they were like in Schaumburg, which is a long drive from where we live. And we went to it, and it was great for him to go and be able to get his picture taken with Baby Jay and all that, and talk to all clubs or the student residents, advisors, and stuff like that. But it would be so nice to be able to do that virtually, not have to say, oh, well, this is the night that it is, and it's not convenient, right? So. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can't go to the Chicagoland one, but you can go to the one for Milwaukee, right? Because
sure.
It's virtual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just more flexibility sort of built in to being able to check out different colleges and universities for sure.
Yeah, that's great. Well, any last words of wisdom that you'd like to leave us with on Marketing Mambo, Jessica?
Oh, man. Well, I really appreciate being part of your podcast and being able to spend some time with you today. Ultimately, with college and university marketing, I think it's making sure that you do invest in those tools. It's not going to get any easier to recruit students from here on out. There are effects in terms of the population from the Great Recession. Like, there's just fewer students that are going to be available for recruitment here in the next like 5 to 7 years. So just making sure you're paying attention to your storytelling, your brand awareness, and putting some marketing toolkit pieces in place to make sure that you can remain competitive as things get even more competitive.
Yeah, well, so marketers and admissions professionals at colleges and universities, Jessica is speaking the truth. She's somebody that's out there on the front line. She sees what's going on. She knows what the trends are. And so if you'd like to reach out to her, Jessica, how do people reach you?
Sure. Yeah, you can reach me. I'm on LinkedIn, Jessica Sacheret, but that last name is hard to spell. So you can also email me at Jessica S, that's JessicaS, at MediaCross, MediaCross.com.
Okay, great. So Jessica, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Terry.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Marketing Mambo. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, like, and share. I'd love to hear from you. Check out the show notes for my social media and contact information. Until next time, adios.